Pues, so when Jesus said, salt, namely, you're the salt of the earth, we tend to think of the salt in our cupboard or on our dinner table. We think of salt as mostly just sodium chloride, maybe with a little bit of iodine in it, because that's pretty necessary for us to live. If you like to spend money, you might think pink Himalayan salt, you know, with the grinder, that never makes sense to me. Like, salt doesn't go, like, why do you, it's not pepper, well, it doesn't matter. Or kosher salt, or sea salt, or something like that. And depending on your age and general health, we might think of something that if you put too much on your food, your spouse yells at you. Think about it. We might think of salt as something that makes your mom's meatloaf edible. We think of salt, but then it's just not good and it ruins a dip. And the tricky thing is that when Jesus says salt, he means basically none of that. That is not how salt would have been understood by the people listening to Jesus talk. I mean, yes, the idea of adding flavoring probably exists in the broader Greco-Roman. Fun fact, that's actually where we get the word salad, because salad is gross. The Romans would add halas, which is salt, to it to actually choke it down. But if you're living in Galilee and somebody starts talking about salt, you are thinking of this complex mixture of different compounds, different technically salts in the modern chemical sense, although you wouldn't necessarily be able to articulate what is exactly in that. They don't know sodium chloride. What they do know is that this stuff that they can get, you can get it from like the Dead Sea and a few other places, can act as a preserver for meats, fish, that sort of thing, to dry it out, which sounds disgusting to me, and I will never try that, but
that was in an era of food scarcity.
What else are you going to do? But we know now that what they would refer to as salt did have some sodium chloride in it, potassium chloride,
would have calcium sulfate,
which
makes it actually not a bad fertilizer, and that was also how it was used.
We think of like destroying gardens by pouring salt, and it would, I guess, if you used enough of it. But they would have understood salt as a thing that preserves food so that it will last, which is vital in an era when most of the time you lived hand to mouth, meaning whatever you got that day, that's what you get to eat. And if you got nothing, you don't eat.
And they would understand this as a compound that you can use to
put in certain kinds of soil that would allow it to grow better. In other words, when Jesus uses the word salt, the people listening will think, to use a modern phrase, the substance that allows for human life and flourishing. Because if you cannot preserve food and cannot grow food, you die. That's just how it works. And so when he says to the people listening to him, you are the salt of the earth, he is saying to them, you are necessary for the flourishing of human life. That is a big statement to make. And if it were anybody other than Jesus and maybe St. Paul who said it, we would roll our eyes and say, oh, come on, we're not that narcissistic. But Jesus actually means it. This is part of what we call the Sermon on the Mount, which has some of Jesus' most famous and most difficult thing. Things like if someone hits you on the cheek, turn to him the other, pray for your enemies, love those who persecute you, and so on. Those things that are really tough that we typically like to explain away and say, well, he didn't really mean that because I can't live up to that standard, so please don't make me.
But
in reality, when Jesus
says things in the Sermon on the Mount,
he actually means them pretty directly, more directly than usual. There's no parable. There's no metaphor. So what does that mean for us to be the salt of the earth and the light of the world? Now, I think these two sayings are coupled for very specific reasons. We can contribute to the flourishing of human life. And by being a light, it's not the point isn't the light itself, it's that light allows everybody to see. And a very, very important thread that runs throughout the entire biblical narrative, especially the Hebrew Bible, is God establishing a people for himself who are supposed to represent what it looks like to follow the one true Creator God, and as a result, be truly human in the best sense of the word. That's a big charge for us. Even in Albuquerque, New Mexico, a mid-sized-ish city in a low population state, in a mid-sized congregation known as Christ Lutheran Church and School. So what does that mean? What does it mean to be the salt of the earth? To act as fertilizer, to give life to the things that we touch?
To contribute to the flourishing of humanity.
Well, we've talked a little bit about that. And 2 weeks ago, we looked at some of the things that have happened over the past year.
Commitment Sunday, over the last couple of years, has kind of evolved into this State of the Union. Like, yes, part of Commitment Sunday is a conversation about giving.
Where this isn't a fundraiser, we're not raising...
this isn't a capital campaign or anything like that. But part of it is just
a request that you would just let us know what you intend to give over the next year. Because
turns out that's a very helpful number to have as we start to plan out budgets and things like that. It's not a binding agreement,
but it does point us in the right direction. And yeah, we could spend a lot of time talking about the importance of giving, and
how a spiritual discipline of tithing, giving 10% of what you get back to the church, can be really healthy.
Because it turns out, if you can give something away, that thing is not,
it is unlikely to control you. And while that
is a component, we've been using this as also just an opportunity to celebrate what God has done
and what God is doing and where we think God is leading us.
And over the last several years, it's been a ton of fun to just take a moment and look back and say, wow, look at what God has been doing. I mean, I think a couple years ago now.
I've only been here for three,
so two-ish.
God blessed us with some money that we didn't really anticipate.
And therefore, an institution, an organization like ours, there is a temptation there to say, well, we must use this to preserve our community as it is. And I say temptation because if we want to die a slow, painful death, we should do that. It's kind of like if you've done nothing different, Why would you expect anything different? And so instead, we started to generate this idea that
we have this huge opportunity to reach
families all that come from throughout the Albuquerque area who literally
pay to be on campus.
We have an opportunity to teach their children and tell them about Jesus at the same time and minister to them in great need. And over the last couple of years, there have been some very, very tragic and very poignant moments when we've been able to step in as a church and minister to families in some very dark moments. And it has been good.
And so what we started to generate was this idea, clearly guided by the Holy Spirit, where we started to say, well, what would it take to better build that bridge between our church and our school?
Well, I think what it's going to take is really a staff position.
If I had to do all of that plus all of what I do, I would just die. And so we started to talk about what
that might mean.
And as we started to form this idea of having what we eventually call the Director of Youth, Family Life, and School Ministries, which is a mouthful of the title, yes, I recognize, but it's a big job. We then
realized, well, we have this pot of money that God has just thrown into our laps. If we really want
to make this position successful,
we need to appeal to the generosity and the mission-mindedness of the church. And so that's what we did. And we had a number in mind, and you guys basically doubled it. It blew me away. I mean, I was still just getting to know you. I didn't know how generous you guys really are. Not that I had reason to think otherwise. Let me be very clear on that. But it was clear that this was a church and community that valued people that exist outside of our walls. And that is worth gold. And in that process, it is clear that God had really just been involved the entire time. Because when the fundraising ended and we realized, wow, we can really fund this position, this is fantastic. I quite literally lost many nights of sleep right after that going, what have I done? We're never going to find somebody to do this. And as we formed the call committee and started looking at who's out there and what's going on, I started to lose more sleep because I realized I wouldn't find somebody. And then I got this email from somebody who said, would you consider somebody with the qualification of a deaconess? And I wanted to write back, I would consider a Burmese python if I think that they can do the job. But instead I just said, yeah, that would be great. Send over her information. And she's now right there. And we heard 2 weeks ago what she's been up to, and I promise the best is yet to come. This last fall, as we started to realize that we're going to have to rethink the way we fund our school. It's such an important ministry opportunity, but the world is changing. And because it is changing, and expenses are changing, and priorities are changing, that we as a church couldn't support the school like we used to. I mean, back in the olden times, you would go to the Lutheran school where you were a member, and
you wouldn't have to pay anything. That blows my mind.
I was not a Lutheran.
I don't even know if I was
alive at that time.
But anyway, the wild thing is that as we had to appeal to your generosity and to what God is doing in and through our school, again, the way the Holy Spirit works and the amount raised, it's really going to make a difference. As it goes to our scholarship fund, we had a gala at the end of February, and thanks again to everybody
who was a part of that that raised far more than I would have guessed, and maybe I should learn, but I'm a slow learner. And it is such a blessing as a pastor to know that as we talk about our ministry, not just to the school, which is primarily families outside of the walls of our church, but to our broader community, to know that I don't first have to convince you that this is a good idea, is truly a privilege. In other words, I can start a conversation about what Jesus means when he says, "Be you are the salt of the earth," meaning you are the ones who contribute to and help grow what it means to be human in the best sense of the word. And I don't have to convince you that we should probably take Jesus seriously. And so, as we have looked, and we talked about this a bit last week, where do we think God is leading us over the next 5 or so years? And we have Elizabeth up again, and Al Kushner up, talking about the Vision Task Force. And one of the consistent things that came up was this idea that we want to grow our ministry. And that might sound like a no-brainer. Well, what church doesn't want to grow? To which I'd say, first off, you'd be surprised. And second off, that's harder than it sounds. Even for those of us who know how complicated and tricky that can be, it's still harder than it sounds. I don't know if you know this, but the world has changed. That's a joke. Of course it's true. It's not a funny joke. Because it represents a very significant challenge. Culture has shifted in ways that honestly were kind of hard to predict, though some of us saw it coming. And then you just throw COVID into the picture that accelerated that change in ways that we are still trying to figure out. We now live in a culture and in a world that was not our parents' culture and definitely wasn't our grandparents' culture. The way that those who are not connected to God through Jesus operate and view the world has radically and dramatically changed. And this is also true of many of us. This doesn't have to be a bad thing. It may present challenges, but fear is not a Christian virtue. And one of the things that can happen to even the best meaning of all of congregations is that when we sense things changing out there, we want to circle the wagons and protect what is familiar to us, because that's where we find a sense of safety. This is where we get the classic joke, how many Lutherans does it take to change a light bulb? The answer is change. And that's funny to an extent, but the reality that our heritage is nothing but change. We do, and I'll just throw this out there, I don't know what this is, don't ignore me. We do contextual theology better than most. We have the tools to communicate the gospel to a world that desperately needs it. The question is, how do we do it? And as we talked about some of our ideas, and again, the best is yet to come. On this Commitment Sunday, I think first and foremost, the most important thing that we can keep in mind is that by the power of the Holy Spirit, we can do this. Or to put it another way, we can be a part of what God is already doing. Now, there's no point in getting into the weeds here because a lot of it involves like strategies for outreach, providing events and moments for people, that provide people with things that they might need, opportunities for parents to come and learn and figure out how to manage, you know, their kids they turn into teenagers, what are teenagers? I don't even know. And also meet certain needs in the Albuquerque area that we see, which we're already doing, and there's still more that can be done, and so on and so forth. But instead of getting into the weeds, because this is not a council meeting, I think the best way to phrase this is first off, the problem. The culture around us is not asking the same questions that they were a generation ago. My friends who are not part of any church or any faith community whatsoever are not asking the questions I was trained to answer in seminary. It used to be, the question was, how could an all-powerful, all-knowing, perfect God accept somebody as imperfect as me? And there are many different answers to this question. There is only one gospel, meaning throw yourself out of the equation. It is God who chooses you. And in a few weeks, we will remember the moment when God expressed that ultimate choice for us when he gave his son to die and then defeated death in our place. People aren't asking that. They used to. Kind of depending on where you grew up, where you used to live. Obviously when I was living in California, they haven't asked that question in a very long time. But think about the opportunity that gives us. Because when you can't supply the questions that you keep, or the answers that you keep in the back of your pocket, meaning, okay, I've already got this question answered, here it is, you've got to re-engage. You get to start asking anew. If Jesus truly is for everybody, how is he for the world around us in its pretty intense state of flux, where we're questioning absolutely everything? What does it mean to be human, and what does that look like? To what do I do with my life? To, again, what does it mean to be human? What does that look like as artificial intelligence? What does it mean to be creator? What does it mean to bear God's image in a world that doesn't even understand what that means? How do I represent the presence of God anywhere I go, let alone at home? I don't have all of the answers. In fact, I have very few. But what I do know is that we are part of a community that follows Jesus, that has existed for about 2,000 years, that has constantly had to re-examine the questions being asked and then learn how to answer them. And by and large, we have done well. Not perfectly, we definitely have had our moments. But in an era when we don't even know who we are anymore, or in an era of increasingly fractured experiences, where you will experience the world around you depending in very different ways, depending on which news apps you have installed on your phone, What does it mean to gather at the table of Jesus? One answer to that question, and then we will together present our commitments to God. If I were a betting person, which I'm not because I'm just constantly wrong, my 12-year-old beat me at Texas Hold'em when I was teaching him. So I don't do that. I noticed that our fellowship meals, which are most every Wednesday during the academic year, basically school's in session on Wednesdays at 5:45 in the evening, we gather for a meal together in the fellowship hall. Different groups and organizations sponsor a meal. If you would like to make a donation, you can. If not, please come and eat. It doesn't matter. But if I had to bet last year, I would have said, I think this year is going to be our last year doing that. And you know, it was what it was, because attendance and interest was just very low. I think it was kind of a fallout or a reverberation of COVID, which just made anything that involved people meeting together complicated. And honestly, everything in ministry has a life cycle. And I thought, all right, I think that life cycle is done. I couldn't have been more wrong. Because for those of you who come to these fellowship meetings, might have noticed that they're really crowded. And every time I come, I just scratch my head. Just first off, how could I have been that wrong? But also, just marveling at this fact that people really want to gather with others under the banner of Jesus, knowing that we genuinely want to love those who come through our door. And as I was talking about this and I didn't ask her permission, I'll ask her forgiveness later, and she wasn't able to be here this weekend, talking with her one Wednesday, and she looks at me and goes, it's meeting need. Wow. Yes, it is. In its basis form, the church is a people who have been saved by Jesus, who simply want to be around and love others. In a world that won't even agree on whether or not God exists and what even the word God means, or what it means to be human, or what the word human means, that's a really good place to start. We love Jesus and we love you. And so at this time, if you have your commitment forms, I will in just a moment invite you forward. We have our gold wrapped liturgical box. Because there is something that happens in the process of bringing it forward and laying it at the feet of Jesus. If you have forgotten it, the ushers will be around with extra copies. Or if you're like me, where that would be a little complicated because I'm up here, you can also mail it in or bring it to the church office. On the forms, you get a blank one. You will see that it's not really just about money. I mean, yeah, that's part of it. Just again, as a budgeting help. And as always, that part of it is completely private. There is only one person who will see this or have access to it. That is not me, and he ain't telling anybody. The only time he will look at it is to add the number to the ongoing amount. But up here are some other ways to give. Not via money, but via your time. That if we think that this church and school community is worth investing in because we think that we are really being the salt of the earth and the light of the world, then we need your help. And there are a whole bunch of boxes that you can check if those kinds of ministries are interesting to you. And by ministries, I don't mean that you have to be in front of people. I know that's terrifying to many. But if you like to garden, guess what? There's an opportunity for you to serve. Now, after the service, after you've come and placed your form in the box, there are some tables with some volunteers. Hopefully I've got this correct, and this list might not be exhaustive, but if you are interested in talking to people about these opportunities to serve, we will have people representing Scrip and Raise Right, serving on boards, being an usher or a lector. You're interested in DBS or children's ministry, children's messages during the service. You are interested or want to know about Stephen Ministry. If you don't know what the Altar Guild is, but that sounds kind of interesting. If you want to be a part of Sunday School or God Cares About You, our mission in the International District. If you are interested in gardening or audiovisual volunteering or in our many iterations of being involved in our music ministry, we should have people to talk to out there as you leave. And so after we partake in the sacrament together as a church family, and before we eat burgers and brats, please take some time and talk to those who are out there. Because this is a ministry worth investing not just our money, but also our time and resources. Amen. At this time, I invite you forward to place your commitment forms at the